Welcome to Meditation and Aliens with Doro and Matt, a webcast that explores everything we currently know about the truth about aliens, human history, reality, consciousness, and the role meditation can do to help us understand all these things, and how we might all work together to build the best world possible for all beings, human or non-human alike. Meditation and Aliens is hosted by me, Matt Reddy. I'm an amateur ufologist. I have a degree in philosophy. I'm the creator of HiveOne.net. I'm also an elected public hospital commissioner in Jefferson County, Washington. Each week, I am joined by Doro Kiley, longtime meditator, meditation teacher, and an experiencer with many stories, and life coach extraordinaire. You can find more about Doro at her website, creationcoach.com. Now, on to the show. And here we are again. How are you doing, Doro?
Oh my goodness, I'm doing great. You know, I'm feeling the buzz of this full moon and all this energy between the sun and the earth. And yeah, it just feels electrified right now. So I don't quite know what to do with all this frenetic energy, but I'm fine. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm good. My wife is on a small trip, and so I'm like by myself at my house, just doing my own thing, research, writing, stuff like that. So
excellent. And you had a class this week, right? With the institute,
the Farsight Institute, yeah, Farsight. Daniel Sheehan. So I think it'll be our weekly update on the latest lecture on ET studies.
Now, clarify for me, is Sheehan part of the Farsight, or is that a different setup?
Daniel Sheehan is a famous civil rights lawyer, and he's been involved with the Iran-Contra affair, the Pentagon Papers. He's done a lot of fighting against the Pentagon and CIA over the years. He is Lou Elizondo's lawyer, and he is the creator of the Farsight Institute, which has a mission of trying to be a public policy advocacy group for disclosure. And also, he made it really clear in yesterday's class, also figuring out a way to establish appropriate diplomatic relationships with whoever these NHI are. And that's what the class yesterday was all about, really got into different dimensions of how this could work, depending on what the truth is, whatever the real reality is of what's been going on.
Yeah. And what is the website for that, the school that you're in right now giving classes? That's the Farsight Institute is the name.
Sorry. Did I say the Farsight? It's the New Paradigm Institute.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought. Okay. So that's the website, right?
Yeah. The New Paradigm Institute. That's the Daniel Sheehan thing. And it's associated with Ubiquity University. For this class, and anyone can sign up to work on a certificate in extraterrestrial studies, and it involves. I think I have it clear that it involves 8 courses, and this is the first course I'm taking.
And you're in the first course, and it took your third class. Is that?
Or yeah, I think it was the fourth class yesterday. Oh, right. And then, let me see if four-week class. And then the next class is also by Daniel Sheehan, which is really going deeper into the facts, history, law, politics of UFO and UAP. And then there's 2 courses that Richard Dolan teaches. Each of these, So I'm looking at this. So maybe that was the last. Of course, I'm gonna have to look and see, like, do I need to register for the next one? But after you do these 8 courses, you're able to get 2 certificates, one from the New Paradigm Institute and one from Ubiquity University, basically in ET studies. And I think after the 8 courses, you can then write a paper to apply for a master's degree in ET studies.
I love that.
Yeah, so I think I'm gonna go that full track. But yeah, I got details on that to Certainly talk about.
So details on your class yesterday, right? Is that what we're gonna jump into today? Oh boy.
I mean, I think it'd be fun to share. I don't really have anything new on the activism front in the world of disclosure. You know, it seems like they are building up to some sort of another hearing, but yeah, so I got that class. The only other thing, we mentioned a couple weeks ago that we're going to get an interview with Yemi from the Farsight Institute, which is a remote viewing group, a citizen-led remote viewing organization founded by Courtney Brown that does these deep dive studies using multiple remote viewers on all sorts of questions related to human history, aliens, what they're doing, where they come from, you know,
all that
all sorts
good
of
stuff.
events.
And
Yeah.
So we're scheduled for that on the 2 weeks out now from
we don't have the
weekend.
date set. We had to reschedule due to travel. I think we were targeting a day in a few weeks from now. So
right.
So we have that. And I wrote and put out a couple of essays this week on Twitter about this stuff. About
You mean a kind of summary of what you've been learning, or what were you posting?
Let me see if I can
Is it stuff we're going to be covering today?
Oh, it's kind of in line with what the New Paradigm Institute mission is. You know, it's basically an essay. It's titled A Call for Human Sovereignty and Self-Determination. Basically, it's just a little essay to humanity saying we have to start facing the reality that UFOs are absolutely real and there's some sort of alien presence here. And it's basically setting up a you know, that the way we should talk about this is to recognize that, you know, all the legal systems of Earth and even the existence of the United States and all nations and all laws might be just I call that in my essay, that's framework one. That's our known framework. But I think there's a very good chance that the aliens have framework two, which is their legal system, their legal framework. And I have a sense it's most likely they see the entire Earth as something existing within their framework. Like, at the simplest terms, they probably are some sort of laws that govern alien species. And the simplest thing would be they probably say that Earth is within the territory of one, or maybe, you know, it's split between a couple species. But let's just, for simplicity's sake, I think in their framework, they probably see Earth as within the territory of a species of alien. Just like if you live in a city in North Korea, you know, you live on Earth and there's laws. But if you live in a city in North Korea, you're governed by the laws of North Korea, which is they can do whatever they want because you're within their framework.
Right.
And so that's, I think, and so in my essay, I just want to, you know, I sort of point out we have to recognize we're probably within framework two of the aliens. And then, but within that, once we recognize that there is a framework that the aliens operate in, we can now use that framework. We just need to target it. And so in the essay, I say, we need to immediately make a declaration to everyone that can hear us that we are, that we have the right to self-determination. And I could read just a little bit. It's like,
yeah. And this is something that you had come up with that you posted on X Twitter.
Yeah, I came up with the rough ideas, and then I worked with, you know, ChatGPT and Claude AI to help polish it up, and went back and forth a few times. At some point in the essay, I wrote, with this in mind, the author offers the following immediate declaration on behalf of all humanity. This I call the Declaration of Human Sovereignty and Freedom from Existing Hidden Agreements. We the people hereby declare as a self-evident truth that human beings have the right to self-determination. We are free-thinking beings, and we have the right to know if any non-human intelligence or other members of group two. Group two is any of the, we're group one, all known humans are group one. Group two is the others, the non-human intelligence, the alien civilizations. If any, we have the right to know if any non-human intelligence or other members of group two currently exist and operate on or in the vicinity of Earth in any capacity. We have the right to know if any treaties, laws, or agreements are currently in place between any humans and any member of Group 2. We have the right to the immediate nullification and renegotiation of all terms of any such treaty. All humans have the right to personal autonomy, and our minds, bodies, and spirits must not be violated in any way by any being without our express written consent. We demand that all members of Group 2 immediately cease all activities that may currently be underway without the full and transparent knowledge of the collective human species on Earth today. We invite all members of Group 2 to openly and peacefully reveal themselves to all of humanity so that we might begin to openly and peacefully craft a harmonious path of coexistence for all beings in which all have the opportunity for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
That's powerful. Well, yeah. You've put it out there. So if they're out there and listening, yeah.
Yeah. And so then I'll just finish the sort of summary of the little essay.
Okay.
So then I list the proactive measures we can take. And the first is redefining individual allegiance. And this is my sort of like my I advise people that, you know, you might want to stop saying things like the Pledge of Allegiance, because I believe that the way these aliens get to feel like they have legal rights is when we pledge allegiance to the flag and to the United States of America, we are pledging allegiance to a legal entity that under their system, you know, that transfers our allegiance to them. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important we just stop thinking that, you know, stop pledging allegiance to your country or your nation or your religion, because I think it's part of the legalistic trick, and part of breaking their hold is we need to break their legal rights in the view of their own system, so that, you know, even in their own laws and by the view of other alien species who might not be hostile or might not be as, that we need to like start to create it legally. They do not have a right to continue to operate in secret and manipulate things as anyways. And then yeah. I go on to a few other things in there, like we need to cease all military action, demand the truth, the records of the JFK assassination and UFOs and things like that. But anyways, that's a little essay I put out there on Twitter.
So if people want to review that, they go to your Twitter account. What is your address, your handle there?
Yeah, @MeditationMatt on Twitter/X.
Great.
I put it out there. And that's one of the things I put out this week. And
I want to tell you what I've been doing too.
Sure, okay.
And it just takes a second. I've been playing with ChatGPT. And I'm trying to ask it to help envision a better social governing structure that would be usable if things began to collapse. And I'm asking ChatGPT to use some suggestions that have been outlined in, you know, this guy Joan Givers, who, if I'm pronouncing that right, put out a TED talk called "The Four Pillars of Decentralized Society." So I'm asking ChatGPT to take those concepts, and I made sure that ChatGPT knew what those were, the four pillars of a decentralized society, and then I said, incorporate these modern technologies that he's talking about, which includes, you know, cryptocurrency and blockchain technologies, combining that with the Iroquois Confederacy, which was the inspiration behind the development of the American Constitution originally. That's where Ben Franklin got some of the best ideas. So when you put those two together, ChatGPT ended up coming up with some really excellent ideas. Yeah. So to word my question was, can you help me envision a creative way to incorporate Joanne Giver's idea for decentralized society in combination with the basic governing concepts of the Iroquois Confederacy, also known as the Six Nations Confederacy or the Haudenosaunee Confederacy? And then, holy smokes, ChatGPT just went on. Boy, yeah, I've got a lot here. It said, combining John Giver's idea with a decentralized society and the governing concepts of the Iroquois Confederacy could lead to a fascinating exploration of decentralized governance rooted in indigenous principles. And then it just goes on and on and on about how to do it. So it's good to be thinking about these things, because if a good section of humanity ends up really declaring sovereignty, we have to have some structure to go on, something to follow, something to envision. So
It kind of starts to overlap with this is during the class yesterday with Daniel. He sort of went over the different situations we might find ourselves, and the sort of the worst case scenario is that our political and governing systems on Earth are so incredibly corrupt and broken at a fundamental level, that we have to, it's sort of like, can we within these systems use these systems to fix them, to make them better, to make them serve humanity, or do we have to step outside of them in some way and really like start over and rebuild something? Those are two very important questions.
That's kind of why I was asking about the Iroquois Confederacy. I have a neighbor here who is a scholar. She is a professor of indigenous cultures, focused in the Americas, North and South. But I asked her one day over tea, I said, if the whole social structures around the world caved in, what would be the best suitable structure to first use in order to start rebuilding? And she did not hesitate. She said the Iroquois Confederacy, because that's what Benjamin Franklin used as a template for the American Constitution. So that would be a good one to put in there, because it does include a lot of morality and how to come to consensus votes. And yeah, I'm not a scholar by any means, but I felt like that sort of puts a foot in the door, gives us some place to start.
It's just sort of wonder what the path would be. I don't know, but
So yeah, curious about what your class was. Yeah.
yeah, well, let's see. So he went over, so he was going over the possible realities of the political situation. And let's see. I mean, he was sort of exploring how does this UFO disclosure fit with all the traditional worldviews that exist on Earth, with the and the, is it going to break down in the Republican Democratic sort of world, or on a global scale, is it gonna, how does it fit with the global fight between the state capitalist sort of movement and the democratic socialist movement, which was kind of the two things he said that were majorly at work on Earth right now. How does it fit in the whole NATO versus Russia and China situation? Are they, are they, is there some opposition there, or is there a secret, coordination and agreement between NATO and China and Russia that supersedes everything that we see?
These are his questions that he's putting out there. Okay, yeah, good questions.
And and like how should or will disclosure happen? Will, and or what do we want? Do we want 100% disclosure, or do we want some sort of partial disclosure? Is there part of the truth that should be kept hidden from the general population? Should we be fighting for 100% disclosure, or should we be trying to figure out where is the appropriate line to draw for some reason, or safety or something. And then it starts to get good. He says, what degree of change in the Earth power structures, the current Earth power structures, is just necessary for us to do any sort of ET UFO disclosure? What degree of change is unavoidable? And what degree of change in the Earth current power structures will be completely unacceptable to those in the current Earth power structures? Because that means they'll fight us every step of the way as we try to get that disclosure. So that's, and then he's like, so another question is, what degree of amnesty should we be ready to offer to those who have been lying and covering this up over the decades? You know, and, you know, if there's lying to Congress, there's probably been murders, there's been or assassinations, there's been theft, you know, what level of accountability or consequences should we be expecting or pushing for? Or, and, you know, what level of amnesty should we offer in order to help make this happen?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's just, and so then he goes, you know, should we be figuring out how to craft a political reconciliation process, you know, for like in South Africa, they did a truth and reconciliation process after the end of apartheid. And we might, you know, have some sort of similar process. Will it involve, you know, reparations or you call it a disgorgement of benefits? You know, if Lockheed Martin and, you know, other groups have been just enriching themselves off of this cover up and lies, should we be prepared to force them to surrender some of the wealth and benefits they've accrued?
Questions.
I mean, it's great. I mean, that's why it's like, it's so clear. This is such a perfect subject for really serious academic discussion. You know, it's basically, you know, the creation of a think tank for how do we handle this as a matter of policy and process for humanity.
Right.
You know, he talks about if we are going to start negotiating with aliens, not another civilization or multiple civilizations openly, you know, we don't have our world is not unified under one government. So how can humanity negotiate with aliens if we aren't under one government? Are some governments going to have to surrender some level of sovereignty? You know, he points out the United Nations doesn't really function for anything serious because it's not actually a unified body of Earth countries. They have the Security Council can veto anything, and that's why they can't, you know, pass a ceasefire and against Israel and Gaza and other places. So it's like, now, the United Nations couldn't really negotiate for all humanity.
And they're also being heavily lobbied by the WEF group. You know, so there's a lot of influence coming from corporate. You know, so the UN is not what it used to be, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm not sure it ever was what we dreamt for it to be.
Right.
I mean, that sort of goes to the WEF, the Bilderberg group. They may be, you know, part of the secret world government that's been controlling Earth. And that's that's part of the question. He's like, if that's the case, you know, if there is that's sort of like two dimensions to that. He's like, if there is a secret group that is the secret authority of Earth, that sort of goes back to the framework thing I said in my essay. You know, if the aliens have their own legal framework, and within that framework, the ultimate authority on Earth right now of humans is some secret group like the Bilderberg group. So if we're group one and the aliens are group two, I call this secret authority on Earth of humans group one E. I call it E because of the elite. Everyone's saying they're the elite. So group one E is the elite humans. That might be the group that technically, from the aliens' point of view, actually rules Earth. And they are, you know, they do their thing behind the scenes to manipulate politicians, to decide who goes to war. Maybe they even decide how wars are going to end. It's all part of their scheme for just manipulating the population. But if that's the case, that creates a really complicated situation for us to figure out a way to legally unseat this group 1E, because they're not elected. They're designated by the aliens. You know, they're like some council of people that control Earth. I mean, so, but we don't know. We don't know for sure if that's the setup, but if, you know, that's one possibility. That could be the reality we're living in. There's this secret government, Group 1E. Another possibility, you know, let's say that if that doesn't exist, there might be just a secret treaty between Earth nations and the aliens, but it's still a treaty that exists within our framework. Is a treaty between, say, you know, somehow the US government and the aliens, say. That's a possibility, but you know, he said in the, you know, the thing is it's hard to see how a treaty that was not ratified by the Senate could possibly be legal under our system, under our laws, because you have to. But I guess that's what he explained in the last class. There's probably some legalistic argument he could claim that the executive branch has the right to negotiate treaties without Congress or the Senate. And so they might claim they've been in 100 years of negotiation over a treaty agreement with the aliens. And that's why they haven't had to tell the Senate or something. But
wow. This goes deep. This is deep. And he is an attorney, right? So
yeah.
he's kind of looking at this from, wow.
Yeah, he's trying to see a legal, you know, what are the legal methods? Because that's his tech. That's what he's been doing for years. He uses the court system and lawsuits in order to pressure the system to do right and to fix things. But, you know, he's thinking of how to work within the system, the legal system, which he sees. Right. That's his medium of choice.
Yeah, I'm sure he's trying to preserve it too. And maybe he sees it being threatened, you know, trying to keep it functional.
Well, it's, you know, he says, you know, it might not be possible. It might be that our legal system, I mean, and that's what I see as an activist, you know, it's the legal system won't help you if the legal system is corrupt. If the laws that have been passed serve the oppressors, then the laws no longer serve us. You know, the laws used to say that it was legal to own slaves, used to, you know, say that it was legal to have segregation. And so, I mean, if the laws are written in a way that oppress people, then no point in trying to use the legal system. You have to, you know, disobey the laws. You know, you have to have civil disobedience or more. And, but it's, you know, it's worth a try. It's worth a try to, you know, move on every level.
Wow. Oh my goodness. So yeah, this goes, gets very involved. I mean, all the governments, how do you get everybody on the same page to be represented by somebody they agree on? Big, 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 big picture there. So what else you got?
Well, I mean, I just have a tangent about this Group 1E, the secret government. So I had this idea while I was listening to this. So imagine let's imagine that the aliens do recognize there's this legendary story of the Group of 300, that there's 300 people that were designated at some point, and they are the, like, I don't know, I can't remember the origin of how far back this story goes, but that somehow there's an elite class of humans, and their families throughout history have been actually the elite leaders of Earth, and that there's 300 humans that are the secret authority government of Earth. And so we call this Group 1E. And let's just say from the aliens' perspective, that's the group that they recognize as the authority, the representatives of humanity. So if that was the case, you know, then I would say, like, just like with my essay, you know, I would now, and I might probably write something like this, we need to put out a declaration that says to the aliens, we, the humans, immediately call for you to allow us to select the 300 humans that represent us. And whoever you have on your list of these 300 humans that you think represent us, we are rejecting them, and we demand the right to elect a new 300 people that we choose. You know, I think, because if, you know, I mean, it's sort of like, it's just immediately going to the power source. If the aliens, if they agreed, okay, you know, we can allow humanity to vote their new 300 rulers. Then it could immediately, like, take the Bilderberg group and all of them out of commission. They'd immediately be unseated.
And we'd like, yeah, we're going to elect our own leaders. You know, let us choose our leaders if we have to. If you insist we live under the rule of 300 authoritarian group, then let us choose our own leaders. Something like that. Like, is, you know, I like to look at like what big swings could possibly just completely change the dynamic.
Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Bitcoin would do
Bitcoin, yeah. It frees us because, you know, the Federal Reserve is just, you know, it's probably controlled by whoever this secret world government is. And they just get to print money. They just get to print money out of thin air. And it has never been more clear to me that the ability to print money, you know, print more U.S. dollars is a secret way of taxing people. It's just, when they print 10% more currency, they're basically just stealing 10% of our wealth from us, 10% of your bank account. And they don't have to pass a tax to do that. They don't have to pass Congress. They just get to do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so obvious once you realize that it's possible to have something like Bitcoin where they can't print more. You cannot print more Bitcoin. There's 21 million and probably 5 million of that is lost because people in the early days didn't realize it was going to succeed. So they didn't take care of it.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin is such a key step in freeing us from the ability of these secret world governments to use printing money to just control Earth. But then it created a technology, you know, because it's uncensorable technology, we can use it for media, we can use it for communication, we can use it for voting. And that will allow us to create, you know, a decentralized, uncensorable system for us to govern ourselves. And yeah, I mean, that's like,
yeah, that's what we have to do. I mean, you know, if we're saying we want our own sovereignty, you know, that those people do not represent all of humanity, we have to know what we're talking about. What's sovereignty? What are we? How can we do that?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm working with ChatGPT on this. So yeah, Bitcoin's going to be a big part of that picture.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the key, I mean, let's just say the aliens were like, okay, fine. You can elect 300 new people to be your leaders and we will recognize that as legit. Then the problem is, the way our voting system happens right now involves a lot of trust of the governing system to
couldn't. It would have to be on a whole different kind of a blockchain or something.
Yeah. Blockchain-based voting. And it's actually, Michael Saylor is this huge Bitcoin advocate. He's the CEO of MicroStrategy. But he talks, I saw a great interview with him recently where he really talked about how this is spreading into other systems. And he really eloquently explained how Bitcoin was the genius of that was an uncensorable ledger. And we're using it for money and property with Bitcoin, but we can now expand that to all sorts of property and to voting and decision-making.
Contracts,
But the key is you need an identity system. You need a way to know that it's one person, one vote. And we don't quite have a standard for that yet. We don't have a standard identity system that has really worked so far on the blockchain. There's a number of competing initiatives, but it's the only thing that's stopping us from really using the blockchain to vote on anything we want, whether it's your opinion on movies, who you want to vote for president, who you want to vote for leadership. And so that's an area I'm really watching carefully, because with the software platforms I'm building, like, you know, it's like you need identity, because it's so easy in the digital world to create multiple identities, multiple wallets, multiple addresses for yourself. And that totally undermines the whole idea of voting in a fair way. So,
yeah. But you said there were some think tanks out there working on this idea.
Yeah.
What's in the pipeline? Do you have any examples?
Well, nothing has become the standard one, but one that might actually reveal itself as a legit one. And this is what, so Saylor mentioned that, so you can on Twitter, on X, you can pay to get sort of like a verified identity on there. But that doesn't work for the world. That's just one software platform.
Right.
But you know, another one that might actually work is Coinbase, because Coinbase gives everyone cryptocurrency addresses. And that's what you need for the blockchain You know, voting is you, everyone needs an address, but then you need someone doing identity verification. And that's what Coinbase does as a financial institution. It forces you to, you know, reveal your identity. And so and Coinbase is considering sort of really enabling their individual accounts to really take part in these blockchain applications on Solana and Ethereum and all these other blockchains. And if they really open that up, it should be so easy to just use Coinbase identities as a pretty solid form of identity for people. And it might not work for, you know, all the way through Russia and China. They might not trust Coinbase as a vehicle. But once you have a crypto address, you know, anyways, I think that's a possibility. I think Coinbase identity might really help be a step in the right direction, so that very quickly every human, at least in the US, would have a verified identity and verified blockchain addresses. I guess the only other thing, the problem with that is corporations can get Coinbase addresses. So you'd have to, but you'd be relying on Coinbase to differentiate a real human from a corporation. But
well, the important thing is we're putting it out there. We're really asking the universe for the perfect solution.
Yeah.
So,
I have my own solution that I'm going to implement, or I've been sort of thinking about for a while.
Oh boy. You going to share it?
Yeah, well, it's based, and there is a, I can't remember their name anymore. There was another group that claimed to be trying to do exactly this system, but it basically would be like, you know, so like it could start with just you and me. Like, I know I'm real. I know you're real. We each get a crypto address. And now we basically grow by, I would give, you know, you say somewhere between 10 and 50 tokens that are for confirming the identity of between 10 and 50 other people. And you would just, and so I would like take one of my tokens and give it to you. And it would be, that would be my way of saying, I know, I trust that you are a real person, that you only have one identity on the system. And then you would do the same thing. You would give me one of your tokens, and then we'd have the ability. So let's just say 10 other people, we can send a token to them to say, we trust them and that they're real. And when you, you know, trust 10 other people, they each get 10 tokens and they can do the same thing. And so it basically, it starts to web out very quickly, you know, in an exponential form, just like when it grows like this. And what happens is it would create a web. So coming out from just starting with you and me trusting each other, you eventually have a web of like 100,000 people in this trust network. And some people would have multiple, they would have more trust because you could, they don't have to be just trusted once. You know, I have 10 friends, they might send, you know, a token back to me. And, you know, so some people might have like 100 or 1,000 trust tokens from other people, and all this would be recorded. So if,
and so how do you trust? I mean, you're talking about, you can trust somebody who you've actually met, somebody in your family, somebody, a friend that you have seen face to face, somebody who you can physically interact with. You know, they're not a bot or a artificial intelligence.
Yeah, so it's then, basically okay. Just, it's almost like in your town, you know, it'd be a way, you know, so when someone voted or said something, you would see, oh, that person is trusted by 200 people. And we would know which 200 people that was. And so if someone did lie and got caught, they were trying to game the system. They had, say they had multiple accounts. They were trying to have two identities, and that was revealed. You would be able to immediately see exactly what other people were connected to that. And so it would be like, it wouldn't be a perfect system, but it would be robust and based upon like human to human, you know, basically human trust. Just like in a town, if you go to a town and you meet some guy named Joe, you can just ask around and get an idea of what the actual trust level is of this Joe person.
Yeah.
This is what it would sort of be a, yeah.
I think that's a brilliant idea. You know, if it's got, you know, problems, those are just tweaking the problems. You know, I think that's a really great basic place to start.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. And I've been thinking about, I was going to try to build it. There was another company that was basically had the same model, and they were trying to do a decentralized ID. system. But and I even tried to contact them to get it to use it on Hive One, the social media platform I built. But they my developers could never figure out how to work with them, and they didn't seem to respond to us when we asked for help. And I don't know if that's because they, I mean, one of my theories is I looked at their platform and it looked like they already had some group or organization that kind of called themselves something like Hive One, or it was like one hive. And so I think they either, I don't know if they just were disorganized and incompetent, or if they felt like they didn't want to work with me because Hive One has a similar name to something of theirs and they thought that was bad, or they didn't trust me for that, or they just didn't like the confusion of that. I don't know, but I'm back to
Well,
thinking maybe I just need to
I
build it
bet there's
myself.
enough people out there that would be willing to put in some ideas, create a think tank
Yeah.
to get this off the ground, but I think that's a good start.
Yeah. Yes. So let's see. Yeah, I mean, it's very relevant. It's really inspiring to be part of this class with the New Paradigm Institute, because at the end of it, he was talking about like we need to figure out how to organize as a UFO community, and how do we coordinate, and what initiatives do we focus on, and this is all totally in line with my thinking.
Yes.
And
If
yeah,
you
and
go
it's
through all the classes, when is it that you think you would get your credentialing?
well, I think each course is 4 weeks and they're pretty much sequential. So I think we got 12 more weeks of classes. I need to look and see if I need to register for the rest of it. And then I have to write a master's thesis. And so some of these essays that I'm working on and that I've, you know, might be, I have so many ideas for things that I could, you know, do as a focus thesis. And then you can go for a full PhD.
That's great.
I mean, I don't see that why I would ever stop. This is like just like such a fascinating, though, you know, it's a fascinating, fun, interesting, you know, and seemingly incredibly important topic. But then, you know, part of me is just like, how can you? I mean, it's so hard to take a subject seriously if the whole world doesn't believe it's serious, doesn't believe it's real.
That's right. I mean, you got to not care what people think, just to talk about it.
Right, but it's the world's th that people don't take it seriously undermines our ability to deal with it. And so you actually we need the world to wake up to that it's serious so that they will help fix it and
Right.
participate in the fixing of it. Otherwise, we're just sort of like banging our heads against the wall. And yeah. And I mean, and also that's like emotionally, like intellectually, I believe this stuff. This is true. This is really what's going on behind the scenes. But because it's hidden, a part of me is just like, I can't really emotionally take it seriously. You know, I can't. So it's a weird mental position to be in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if I mention it to some of my family up north, they is, oh, there she goes again,
Yeah.
yeah, that's it's a real stigma.
But I'm just pressing forward, and so I've launched a new thread of a tactic for trying to do this, to try to unify and organize the ufology community, activist community, and invite members of the cryptocurrency community in to really participate in this and to leverage cryptocurrencies and meme coins in order to try to fight for disclosure and diplomatic peace with aliens.
Well, that's interesting. How would you leverage meme coins?
Well, you know, people, it's very easy to release a meme coin, a crypto token. And so I've decided to create what I'm calling the Alien Disclosure Peace Alliance. And what it's going to do, and I created a cool logo for it. I was working on all day yesterday. And what we're going to do is release alien disclosure focused meme coins and just launch them and release them. And if And if people want to support the movement for disclosure and for figuring out the truth and negotiating peace with whoever these aliens are, they can just buy the coins just as a sort of an act of participating, or they can buy them, trade them, whatever. And if any of the coins grow in market value, then they'll climb up the charts and they'll get press based on that. And so it'll be, and there's really no limit to the number of meme coins that we can create. And so each one can have its own sort of message. So I created one. The first one is sort of my test case. And I call it, or it's called, Reptilians for Peace is the name of the coin. And the symbol of the coin is Lacerta. And it's on the Solana blockchain. And it's named Lacerta after Lacerta, the reptilian female alien who was apparently interviewed in 1999. And the transcript of that interview has been floating around the internet. And the Farsight Institute did a remote viewing study of that interview incident and of Lacerta. And according to their study, they, as far as they're concerned, it was real. Lacerta is real. She really is a female reptilian alien. And they think, well, I don't know, based on what I took from their studies, she may still be alive. She may still be a leader of at least part of the reptilian aliens. So this meme coin is sort of it's my attempt at reaching out to the reptilian aliens, openly acknowledging their existence. And also it's sort of a way of subtly saying, I believe there has to be some portion of the reptilian species that is for peace and wants peace with humans. And this coin is targeting whoever that is, even if it's a very small percent of the reptilians, because everything we hear is they seem to be a pretty aggressive species.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, I created it and I put it out there, and no one's really bought it. You know, I'm not familiar with the techniques for promoting meme coins, but I'm working through how you're supposed to do it. And you know, this is the test case, and then I'm gonna create a few others. So you know, like this one has a clear message: Reptilians for Peace. And my dream is that, you know, if there are a million reptilians in our solar system, you know, maybe 5%, maybe 1% of them are actually in favor of peace, and a way they could actually buy some of this. It could be a way for them to participate. And just by buying this coin, they would be saying they support the idea of peace, or at least they could put on, you know, if they're smart, the reptilians would put on the facade of supporting peace. You know, they would buy it just because they'd want humans, you know, when they know they get revealed, they want to be able to show, look, yeah, we've been for peace this whole time.
Okay. I'm envisioning it just going off the charts. All the reptilians are buying into it.
Yeah. And I, you know, and the great thing is these, you know, the coins, I can put out all this information with the coin under the description. I made a really long description of it saying, this is not a joke. This is not just a way to make money. The purpose of this coin is alien disclosure and revealing the truth about the history of humanity, and then figuring out a way to achieve peace. And the money, if it actually, and so I'm holding back right now, I got about 20% of the supply of the coin is held in wallets I control. And so if it takes off, I'm just going to dedicate all that money to this mission.
Okay.
So who knows? And then, you know, and this is just the first coin. If other people like this idea, I mean, there's so many people trading meme coins to try to get rich, you know, yeah. So why not combine the fun and excitement of meme coins with an actual fun, meaningful
mission?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Next one would be ET disclosure coins or memes.
ET disclosure. That's a good idea. That's a nice, simple one. ET disclosure coin. I have a list of, and that actually, I think, could be part of the fun of it. I'm going to just invite people. What do you want the next coin to be? Like, tell me what you want to name it. What would be the theme of it? And then, you know, we can, you know, that's part of the making these coins successful is building community around them. So I could engage the community in voting on the next name and logo. And then we just maybe do one a month and just keep on doing it. And then eventually, like, we'll have like these 10 meme coins, and it'll almost tell a story, because each one, the name of it will like hit one aspect of the truth that we're trying to get at.
Interesting. You could do one after each class on the, you know, governments for ETs, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, lots of creative ideas there.
Yeah. Now it's not like free. You can't do it for free. It does cost money to launch each one. I think it costs, I think you a minimum of a couple $100s. But really it's more like $500 to $1,000 to launch each one with any sort of like success. But anyways, if you know, if any of them start to become successful at all, it'll help start funding itself so we can just keep going.
Yeah, I watched that video, and you should put the link below, you know, so people have that video that you sent to me, stepping through how to do it. This guy created one and launched it, and what was it? 2 hours later, he made $1 million.
Yeah, this guy launched Hammy. I think it's called H-A-M-I. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a crazy thing. But you know, it also meme. The thing that makes these meme coins have this potential for success is that they are really, they're legit currencies.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that once they have their supply locked out there, it's as secure as Bitcoin, in the sense that the supply can't be changed and you can't duplicate them. And so it's, you know, it's just, they're not going to be, I mean, it's like if 1,000 years ago, you know, if any person could create 1 million copper coins real easily, and it's just, and, but they would be, not only would you create 1 million copper coins, but you create 1 million coins that are exact replicas of one another. So they are unique. They all have a picture of you on them, but they're also indestructible. They like no one could ever destroy or mess with one, and no one could ever possibly make a duplicate of it. That's the power of what cryptocurrency gives you. And so, you know, it's a different world if every person can now create 1 million copper tokens that are indestructible, of limited supply, and can't be duplicated, and they suddenly start trading them like trading cards.
Yeah.
It becomes it's like a sub ecosystem of financial transactions, which, I don't know. It's a fascinating phenomenon. I don't think it's going away.
It is fascinating. I mean, this little area that I live in, is a small community, and they way back in the day, it's an old hippie community. They came up with their own currency, and it was made out of, this was way before computers or anything. Made out of little squares of denim fabric, and they were called Floyd script, and each one had a value to it, and they were actually being traded between the stores and the farmers, and it was an experiment. It was way back when the experiments were big, back in the hippie days. So, so yeah, different kinds of currencies are valuable if you can create them. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's a fascinating, fascinating time.
Yeah. So I don't know if aliens use crypto, but maybe we'll get them into it.
Well, that's, you know, that's one of my, I think that's a huge question, is not only what's the governing framework, what laws do they respect? Do they have any sort of court system, you know, but also do they have a currency? Do they use money? I mean, if there's multiple alien civilizations, you know, yeah, it's just like you can't just trade for stuff. I mean, they could always trade resources and supplies, but you need some sort of unit of account to really make trade feasible. And so, I mean, you would think a cryptocurrency would be the perfect solution. I mean, it is the perfect solution for a money system because it's not corruptible, but maybe they just use centralized fiat currencies and they have some sort of civilization exchanges, just like on Earth, we have currencies and they try to exchange, and once in a while one collapses. It just doesn't seem that would work well for any species that lasts thousands of years. They would need something like Bitcoin that is That is a
Yeah, I don't
perfect.
know. And then I think of Star Trek, you know, they talk about Earth has, you know, evolved long past any need for currency, and they have a whole different system.
Well, they
And
said that, but if you went to Star Trek Deep Space Nine, they had gold-plated platinum was the currency that the Ferengi
oh, the
and
Ferengi,
yeah. So
yeah.
they had something that they were using as gold, you know, like so it's like they couldn't get away from the fact you know, there's always a place where you need to be able to transact.
Yeah.
And but and you know, I mean it's like, and if you don't have currency, that's the weird thing about the Star Trek world. You have no currency. Who gets to live in the biggest mansion, you know, in the best place on Earth if you don't have any sort of money, you know? And who determines, you know, it, like, does everyone have to work, or do, you know, like, are you obligated to do 5 hours of work a day, and there's no way to get around that because no one has extra money to be able to just like goof off, and there's no way to earn extra hours so you don't have to work. I mean, it's like, I just don't see how you construct a system that doesn't use money in some way.
You know, I believe that we're here to see what we can become. And I think if we started at a very young age teaching children to tap into their innate skills and interests and talents and encouraging them to become an artisan, not just a cog in the wheel of the society, but to become real artisans. Everybody has a skill, everybody has something to offer. Whether it's, you know, cooking or, you know, or teaching math, that could be an art form, you know, or building tables or whatever. So if everybody was taught from a very early age to discover and develop their skill, their innate talent, what they have a real passion for, then whatever they're building and constructing, you know, that could be used as a way of exchanging for other goods. I mean, it's an old barter system. Yeah, I don't know. I get lost in the weeds with this. But yeah, you could do that to a degree, but big international trade, obviously, that's not going to be happening. Yeah, we got to start from scratch and rethink how it all could fit together.
Well, if we can just, you know, make a way for humans to have a secure, decentralized way of just expressing our opinions about everything, you
Right.
know, if people could just like every day wake up and say, if they wanted to, just instantly just record on the blockchain, hey, I'm planning on voting for, you know, whoever, then you would, instead of having the media doing these surveys of just a handful of people and telling us, oh, looks like, you know, this person's ahead in the polls, and then the day of the vote happens, and all we have to compare the results from the vote are all these sketchy polls that only asked 500 people. If instead we could record our opinions on the blockchain, so it said, oh, it clearly in my county, this presidential candidate, everyone's already said like 10% more people in this county have said they're going to vote for this candidate, and then we go and vote at the polls. It better match what we've already said. You're not going to be able to fake it if we already know what
Yeah.
our opinions are. We already record every day our opinions.
Yes.
Anyways, if we can just eliminate the control and oppression, and then we have sound money, we can start figuring out a better system.
Yeah, and our leaders that we vote in would be not put there because they have a lot of money, but maybe because they have a lot of wisdom. That would be a good goal. For
Well, you
leaders
know,
to be wise, not rich.
yeah, it'll help to know if our leaders are actually anything more than just puppets being controlled by some secret group.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whew. A lot
Interesting
there.
times.
Well, do we have time for just a couple minutes to feel our feet on the floor and get real for a second?
Yeah, let's do a closing meditation.
Yeah, we'll make it a real short one. So just remembering that all of this is not clear. It's not very, it's mostly just ideas, it's concepts, it's evidence coming up, but nothing really solid yet. So we're all just kind of floating around in this soup of not knowing for sure much of anything at this point. So in order to stay somewhat centered, we need to be able to let go of these anxieties and come back to the moment and put our feet on the floor, breathing in and out. I'm just going to ring a bell just to get a sense of this is here right now. Take a nice deep breath. Just let it all go. Let everything go. The anxiety, the uncertainty, the maybe fear, even the excitement. Let's just come right here, right now. Feet on the floor, butt on the chair. Maybe your hands are in your lap. Let's take a nice deep breath in. And just let it go. When we can come home to ourself in the moment, and clear our mind, everything falls into place. It's extremely important to maintain some sense of equilibrium during these conflicting times. Our mind can be so scattered and pulled in different directions. It's important to have an anchor. And the anchor is right in the moment, breathing in and breathing out. It could be in the moment, looking around. If you're driving, watching the scenery go by. Looking at the clouds, if you're walking, feeling your feet on the ground. These are mindful moments that help keep us stable. This is as close as we can get to what's real. Breathing in and breathing out. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Dora.
Have a great week.
You too.